Okay. So I don't know why I said okay. This is recording. We're recording episode one of a, what is it? A Book of Feast and a Bottle. I need to remember that. But we're recording episode one. My name's Zaid, and you are
Candace.
Okay, and you'll get to know who we are, and I don't know. I guess I'm a somewhat of a nerd who pretends not to be a nerd, and Candace is a nerd who has given up on pretending she's not a nerd, I think.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say I'm afraid at this point it's a little pointless for me to pretend like I'm not a nerd.
So the idea is that we're going to be reading a book, which today was Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep by Philip K. Dick. We're going to be reading a book. We also made a dish. We'll talk about that in the second half. And we are just hanging out, just talking about it and having a drink and just chilling. You got anything to add, baby?
No, we're just going to sit here and talk about our give our thoughts on the book. Neither one of us are like literary professionals, so this is just, you know, very hobbyist take on the subject. So
yeah, we're just trying to like read. Have an excuse to read a book. Something push us to read a book, you know, and hang out and talk about it and, you know, see if anybody has any ideas about what to read or what to eat. This is an excuse to eat a bunch and read a bunch of books.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And we would love to take suggestions from people and, you know, really expand our horizons a little bit.
Yeah. So right now we have a list of books, which I guess we can put on the website, but we have a list of books that we are sort of considering. We're trying not to do too many things of one specific genre. The initial idea was for it to be like culture driven, but I'm also open to like fantasy things. I'm also open to like trying to make fantasy foods and I don't know. You got anything to add, baby?
We're just trying to keep it fun and entertaining, and maybe a little stimulating, but it's mostly just to have fun.
So we can jump right in then. So we read just recently, I think we finished it yesterday, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep by Philip K. Dick. Actually an audiobook version, which had a really interesting kind of storyboard. I'll put that on the site, but
yeah, then this is supposed to be what Blade Runner's based on, where they got the inspiration from. But I feel like it's a little less of an action story and more of a psychological story than a movie is.
I feel like the like immediate expectation is that we're going to compare this to Blade Runner, but I'm going to be honest, it's been like 20 years since I've seen Blade Runner. I didn't see the second one. I don't remember it being, I remember it being more of a fucking like Die Hard type action movie. And I don't remember all the Mercer stuff. I don't remember even like the whole animal stuff. Was that even touched on in Blade Runner?
In the second one, I don't remember them touching on the animal part of it. But I know that they touched more on the interactions with like Isidore and the androids and than they did. And the original version of the movie.
They definitely, like, there was a different vibe to the book. Like, there was a different vibe to the book from the movie. but also they were both very like, they were both very chatty.
Yeah, a little bit.
Like the dude is like, yeah, I'm going to have sex with this android and I'm like, but I love my wife and like, I'm going to come back. I need to come back home and like, you know, take care of my responsibilities with my wife, but I'm going to sleep with this android and all of this shit and, but still pretend like the most important thing in the world is for me to come home and like attend to my wife.
Yeah. I think also it was chatty. But also I think there was a little bit of a purpose behind that because, like you said, he grapples with his relationship with his wife. One minute he's over it and wants to leave her, and the next minute he can't wait to get home and you know, show his wife all the new stuff he bought, or you know.
Yeah, but you know what I think? For one, it needs to be like touched on that this is like a different world where people's priorities and people's like the people's lives are different. So maybe in that world, the relationship isn't that strained by the fact that he's by infidelity, for example. Maybe like they need each other to like emotionally to survive way beyond that. But
there is more of a meta to it that I feel, which is what I was gonna say, is that it's about the kind of lack of empathy that humans have for each other in general, I feel. And you know, even when though we like to pretend that we care about people, for a lot of us, at the end of the day, our only real concern is how we feel and if we're happy, than if the people around us are happy.
That's true, but I also felt like he definitely wrote this from the perspective of he is like the main character, and like his relationships seem rather shallow too. And we don't know if this is like the writer's sort of like experience with relationships, or if this is a point that he's trying to make, I guess.
Or if it's intentional, yeah. That it is just hard to determine.
Yeah, and like the mercerism stuff was I have to remember that this is an older work, you know, because it sort of feels like whenever I'm trying to determine whether something is a trope or something is kind of a little too on the nose, I have to remember that this is probably like, this is where like the original idea of a lot of these things that were expanded upon came from. So of course it's going to be a trope.
Yeah, it's hard to be, not to be dismissive when you're so used to reading these tropes in literature, seeing them in media, not to just go, oh, that's right, this is where it came from.
But I mean, that being said, I felt like this was definitely, there was more like nuance to this and more like depth to this than there was like the movie, for example. But like, I don't know. Not all of it was good. Like the stuff about like the kipple, I had a hard time keeping like serious about the kipple stuff.
Yeah, the weird like cheesy, like childish type words that they would use for some things. I don't understand the need to replace the idea of trash with kipple, but maybe I just need to read the book again.
Well, I mean, I get sort of what they were doing with like the psychological aspect of like clutter will like take over, and like this like sort of like obsession with like cleanliness and stuff. And I don't know if this is Isidore, the fact that he's special or whatever, or this is like an obsession that the something that's just like society, something that,
yeah, that's true. We definitely heard more about the couple when the story was focusing on him than you did when other people were the focus of the story, like Deckard.
I think it was just once for Deckard, right?
Yeah, at the end, I remember him when he was listening to the radio at the end there. They were talking about the Kipple. But other than that, all instances of Kipple that I can think of were mostly in relation to Isidore. Another thing that is just about the whole empathy thing is like the obsession, like the obsession with animals and taking care of animals, but outside of the animals, like your relationship with other humans, don't seem as important to Deckard, or even a lot of the other characters. Seem their empathy kind of runs out when it's not dealing with an animal. They're not as empathetic to the other characters in the book.
I think that's a key like aspect of that, is that they've like sort of like commoditized empathy to where it's like they're the Sims and it's just a gauge and it, oh, my empathy's low, I better go. That's like if you right now are like, oh man, I feel like shit, I'm gonna go and donate money to starving kids so that I can like have like positive karma or something, you know.
Or the fact that, you know, you care about taking care of your animals, even if they're not a real animal, like you, even if it's an electric one, they felt obligated to keep up appearances, but having a briefcase made out of baby hide is no big deal. In fact, it seemed like,
oh, it's electric.
Yeah, that one was weird.
We had to fucking pause right when that happened. We're like, wait, what? Baby hide? Like, mm-hmm. You couldn't, I get it, but like as a metaphor, you couldn't go to for something less like excessive.
Yeah. Also, how about the fact that they're living in a war-torn world where they're still actively dealing with the repercussions of a war that nobody remembers what it was even about or who was fighting in it, but you could the effects of it were still being felt with the dust. I mean, I thought that was very strange that very little mention was made of how the world even ended up in that state to begin with.
I like that, though. I like that it's all left. I like that they are not taking three chapters to explain to you, like, oh, like, because when a story goes that way and, like, they start to explain, oh, like, it always sounds the same. And they're like, oh, the humans met the Gorgons and blah, blah, blah. You know, like, there are all of these, like, sci-fi tropes and shit that I'm so fucking sick of hearing that I don't want exposition of, like, three chapters. I would rather it come on a need-to-know basis. Like, you were talking about the dust, the radioactive dust. I'm pretty sure they didn't even fucking say anything about that until, like, chapter 17.
There was very little mention of it in the beginning. Oh, there was some mention of it in the beginning, but they mentioned it a few times throughout the book.
I like that. I like that they're not like just like, oh, because the other option is you get books like, for example, like Game of Thrones and stuff, Song of Fire and Ice, where they're like, oh, and this is the rock that is next to the house, and there was a rock next to that, and they fucking describe everything, and even stuff that isn't going to be relevant.
Yeah, that's true. Or dedicating entire books to the history, like in the case of the Iliad, it's a bit much. I agree. Another thing that kind of struck me is that the whole book almost feels as if it's taking place inside like one person's like reality, as in it's the events themselves are not actually happening, but they're happening inside somebody's imagination. Do you understand what I mean by that?
Yeah, but I feel like that last bit of the book was very, like, was kind of a mind fuck. Like, not a mind fuck, but, like, kind of a fever dream.
Yeah, and the whole pseudo-religious event with Deckard in the desert and him going out and finding an animal, which is all he ever wanted, was to be able to go out and find a real wild animal, and having this religious experience in the process, only for him to go home and find out that it was an illusion. Anyways,
I thought that was appropriate. I thought that if he went out and found the animal and then the end, he lived happily ever after, I would have been more annoyed.
Yeah, I agree. I think that would have been very, very dumb. To be honest, the way that the book ended anyways was just very abrupt and unsatisfying. So,
although I do think there's more books in the series, so that's not really on the author.
Mm-hmm.
Although, yeah, the author's a little bit of a chud, but also, when was this written? Sometime in the 50s? So,
in the 60s, I believe, yeah.
It's not like he was, it's not like this seems, super...
it's appropriate for how a person would have been thinking about this at that point in history, with the social conventions of the 50s and 60s, yes.
Almost even progressive for the 50s or 60s is what I'm saying.
Almost, yes. Another thing that I found strange was... for the whole book, they were referring to the device that they were using to dial in and alter their mind state. They kept referring to it as an empathy box until the very end, where when Deckard calls it a mood organ. And I thought that was a strange shift.
I don't think it's the same. I don't think it's the same. I think, and, I'm sure that somebody's going to correct us if we're wrong, but I was under the impression that at the very beginning when they were, in bed and shit, and they were, she was, calling for something, and he was calling for something, and they had that little initial argument. That was the mood organ, and they were dialing these, three-digit codes or four-digit codes or something into a thing, and it was feeding them mind-altering, altering their mood and shit, right? The empathy box was something for mercerism, where every time they were using it, they experienced the almost stigmata of the Mercer having the rocks thrown at him.
I see. And see, it was my understanding that they were the same device, that they would also, that they would fuse with Mercer and they would have that experience of him having the rocks thrown at him. But they were also using it to connect with other people. They made mention of somebody being suicidal and them having very positive emotions, wanted to share those emotions with somebody who's potentially suicidal, and I thought that they used the same device for that.
I don't know why you think that. Now I don't know if I missed something that connected them or if you're connecting them for no reason.
Yeah.
Because also we listened to this together, but also I was trying not to space out.
Yeah, I mean, we were sitting there smoking and relaxing and chilling the whole time. So it's possible that we may have gotten a little distracted and missed something. But
I was like paying attention, but I was like, I was tuned in. It was just, I don't know. I just never trust that I never find myself incapable of missing something.
That's true. I mean, it's better to just assume that you may have missed something than to think you're never wrong.
But we'll look into it. I'm sure we can figure it out. I mean, did you have any other things you wanted to cover, baby?
Let me see. Let me look at my notes here. I think that covers everything that I have written down on my notes. Was there something else that you had that you wanted to discuss that we hadn't discussed yet?
No, just on the format of this, we'll figure it out as we go. Maybe we'll be a little more strict about what we talk about in the book. Cause like right now, I don't think we have more than like 20 minutes. So, but, sorry. Maybe we'll talk about how we're going to structure this. Maybe I like the loose structure, but I don't know if this is enough. And then we're also going to record separately, and it'll be part of this release, the recipe.
Awesome. And I can't wait to talk about the food. It's probably my favorite part.
Hey, awesome. Well, we already ate it at this point. As of this recording, we already ate it. In fact, I ate so much of it that I'm like kind of disgusted.
But we will put the recipe in. Unfortunately, we won't be able to share pictures this time, but maybe next time we'll remember to take some pictures before we eat it, and we'll share pictures of the finished product. Now for the delicious part of the program.
Right. So this time we're making pastizio. This is just the way I've had it before. I'm not claiming that this is the most authentic. I'm sure there's things. In fact, I want to hear about, like, you know, if there's something, you know, that is supposed to be different, tell me about it, because this is just how I've had it, like from just like family recipe, you know. You got anything to add, baby?
No. I did notice when I was looking up recipes that there were some differences in choices that people made with cheese when doing the bechamel and seasonings a little bit, but I'd be interested to hear people's takes on it too.
Okay, so this is a three-part thing. This is, I guess, to summarize it, it's basically a lasagna, but it's Greek. And it's not the moussaka, which is their other like lasagna thing, but this is noodles, like these hollow noodles, that I've always heard I'll just call those pastizio noodles. They're big hollow noodles, and then it's a layer of meat, and then it's a layer of bechamel.
So it's a little more simple, at least, than a lasagna. The lasagna tends to do multiple layers, but so maybe this is a good way to get into making lasagna if you're a little intimidated.
Yeah, it's certainly like more approachable. It's easier. It's like a beginner's lasagna, but I mean, not to put it down, but I mean, I do like lasagna better, to be fair. But I mean, it has its place.
It's a much more approachable meal and something that would be a little easier to do during the week than trying to do a lasagna if you're busy.
Also, a little less expensive. That ricotta cheese, especially, like, that's always what throws me, like, intimidates me a little bit about making a lasagna, because I'm like, man, I got to buy a whole, like, thing of cheese just for it, you know?
Right. And then you got to find other things to use it in after you get done, because you don't want to waste, you know, ricotta.
Yeah, and it goes bad, like, as soon as you think about it.
Immediately.
Yeah. So, three-parter, this one. You got the pasta, the big hollow pastitio pasta. We used the half a kilo, 500-gram container of the macaroni pastitio misco. And the key was basically cook it like two-thirds of the way. I think they were suggesting like 5 minutes, I think it was. But we didn't have a rolling boil. You got something to add?
No, probably about 5 minutes in a rolling boil. It was 8 to 10 minutes on the package, so you want to cut it off about three minutes ahead of time. So,
okay, and it came out perfect, thankfully. So, yeah, two thirds, like 5 minutes, 5 to 8 minutes seems to be the golden spot there. So you boil the pasta, you set that aside, and then you got to do your meat. And that is, you want to do this one, baby?
So you start off with your garlic and onion and the peppers. And basically all your vegetables, you want to saute them in some olive oil first. You want to get them like a nice golden brown color on the garlic, or until the onion starts to become translucent and it starts to smell very strong. Once everything has become aromatic, you want to add the beef. You probably want to use something a little leaner, so you don't have to worry about draining off excess oil. Probably like 90-10 would be ideal, I would say, for something.
What didn't we use?
We usually use 90-10 for most things. So now, once you add the meat, you brown it. Once the meat's brown, then you add the crushed tomatoes and you add your seasonings to taste, and you let it simmer for about 5 minutes, and then your meat sauce is complete. And you can.
This was the one. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, before I forgot, this was the one where, like, there was a difference in what people did. There was a guy that was using cinnamon. There was a guy that was using, you know, I saw some variants. I don't know. Maybe just the people that I had it from didn't like those spices. Okay, I don't know.
This was my first time trying pastitio, also making pastitio. So I was not 100% sure what to expect, but I followed the recipe pretty closely, and just instead of using what a lot of people did and using cinnamon and bay leaves for the seasoning, I just used a bunch of oregano, salt and pepper too, obviously. So, but I'm sure you could probably use a combination of any of those and it would be delicious.
Yeah. And I'm sure that, like, different places do different things, you know? And everybody's got, like, a home recipe or something.
Yeah, everybody's got their variations.
So then the third part is the bechamel. And so this is pretty simple. You melt butter in a pan, equal parts butter and flour. So in our case, we use 4 ounces. We melted butter in a pan, added the flour, mixed it in until it was nice and smooth, and then while the pan's still in the on the pot and it's hot, you add little by little the half and half. We added like a cup at a time, and just, or well, a little bit at a time, but you know,
I probably did about half a cup at a time, just a little bit, and then stirred in until it's nice and smooth, and then you add the next half cup until you've added all the half and half.
Yeah. And after you do that, you make sure there's no clumps. And then now, this is the part where some people add eggs. I think you're supposed to add eggs. Pretty much the standard recipe calls for eggs, I think. Every time I had it, they didn't add eggs. This is where they just added cheese. So I don't know if that means that what I had wasn't like real bechamel or real pastizio. And I think just people were trying to watch cholesterol, so they didn't add eggs. But honestly, it tastes good both ways.
And even if you use cheese in their bechamel, using a little bit of egg to thicken it can help. It just really depends on how much liquid you've added and how much cheese you've added. You don't want it too thick. It still has to be spreadable like a sauce, but you don't want it really thin either.
Yeah. Whatever way we had it, was like perfect though. Like it came out like, but then the next part, assemble. You want to do this one?
Yeah. So for the next part, you take your pan and you put the noodles at the bottom of the pan. You add some oil to the noodles and you separate them so you can get a nice even layer at the bottom. You also want to mix in a little bit of egg and cheese here too, so that as it's cooking, it will stick back together. You don't want it to remain loose. You just want it loose while you're putting it in the pan so you can make a nice even layer. Then once you have the pasta in, you add the meat sauce, and you want to, you know, tap that on the counter a little bit and make sure that it settles and is even. And then once you have the meat sauce in, you add the bechamel on the top and you smooth it over, and you can finish it off with a little extra cheese on the top. Your cheese of choice, we used feta for this time. And then you bake it in the oven for 40 minutes at 360, or until you have a nice golden brown crust on the top. And then you pull it out and you let it rest for probably about 10 to 15 minutes, and it should be ready to serve.
Cool. And what did you, I know you said it was your first time, so you've got nothing really to compare it to. I've had it a bunch. Like I said, I've had like, the like soccer mom version of this, I think, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I fucking love this. But I'm biased because things like spaghetti, lasagna, anything like that, any like noodles and meat sauce and cheese thing, I am a sucker for.
Oh yeah, they're delicious. And this recipe, again, is pretty simple. It's not too complex, but it's also very hearty and filling and makes leftovers. So, you know, you could probably, like, prepare this when you have time during the week, and then you'll have food for a few days.
Yeah. Word of caution. We almost didn't have, like, the right container. Like we almost needed a bigger container for the proportions that we used. So just plan accordingly.
Right. If you want to, this was for a very large serving of pasticcio. So you might want to do probably about half of what we did. If you're only doing this for a single person, or if you only want to do a single meal with no leftovers.
Yeah, I think we had like, we ate it like three times throughout the day, and it was almost sickening. Like, I don't think I'm going to have this again for a couple years.
Yeah, I think we're good for a little while, but it was delicious.
Okay, well, awesome. So we, I think in the future, we're going to do a little bit, maybe like we'll tell people, in advance, hey, we're going to be reading this book and we're going to be doing this recipe so they can follow along or like suggest things or like tell me if I need to make any changes to it ahead of time, you know? But just we're feeling it out right now. If anybody has any suggestions or anything like that about how this could go smoother, I welcome them. I don't know. I don't really know what I'm doing.
All right. Yeah, definitely would not mind some pointers. I feel like This is a little bit awkward, but this is first time doing a podcast for me, and probably going to be the first time cooking a lot of these recipes. So I'm excited to hear people's take.
Yeah, we'll get better. So see you guys next time.
All right. Thanks, guys.